everybody, and welcome. It's Kate Cook here from the Nutrition Network, and we are very privileged today to have Phil Beard. And Phil is representing Viridian, and you know, Viridian is one of our sponsors. We're very lucky to have Viridian. We love Viridian, not least just because it's such good value. I think Viridian, I've always used Viridian for years and years and years. It's Cheryl, isn't it, your founder? Is she called Cheryl?
She is, yes. Cheryl Powell. Yeah.
And she's a really good egg, and you know, lots of good ethics and things at Viridian. So that having been said, Phil, welcome. So you, what's your qualifications and what sort of, where do you come from in the nutrition space?
Okay, so my, well, thanks for inviting me onto the kind of the stream, so it's a great privilege. But in terms of my background, I've got a master's in nutritional science, and I've also got a sports science degree as well, so I've kind of developed my knowledge around that. But in terms of going into the nutrition space, I went into the public health system with the NHS and helped kind of with the diabetes prevention program. That was a brilliant kind of eye-opener in terms of the nation's health and how science can actually be applied to that public health system, which is hard, but there is a way of doing it. But it's just learning how you can kind of adapt that kind of diet.
It's been a really tough gig because you've got people who obviously arrive with diabetes in the NHS, and mm-hmm. you know what, you know, the motive, you know, because a lot of us are in private practice, obviously, and of course people are paying for that. So if they get to the stage where they're paying for healthcare, in effect they're quite motivated to change. So it must have been very difficult for you with people who arrive not really understanding how they've probably got into a diabetic state.
Yeah, it was very different. I mean, you get so many different kind of socio-economic kind of places or people, and it's hard to kind of tell people you're kind of doing it the wrong way, or you need to start eating these sort of things, because you have to remember that these people are sometimes struggling to put food on the tables and sometimes struggling to actually go to the shops and get everything that they need. So it's kind of thinking about how they can actually change their lifestyles and change their diet through ways of their current kind of living, basically. So it was a very hard way of adapting it, and that's why the science was very difficult to actually apply most of the time. But you could have the basic principles of just kind of getting a better understanding of carbohydrates, getting a better understanding of how proteins and fats play a role. So it was kind of dumbing it down in a way, or making it more layman, but that is kind of really the best way of doing it. And it was very hard because it's only a 12-week program most of the time. So you saw them for kind of one-on-one sessions, then you kind of didn't see them again for a bit, and you don't really know if it helped long term. So, but the NHS were trying. We helped develop that system through a Trudy Deacon, who she's a kind of medical expert and kind of high up in the diabetes researching team. So it was brilliant to kind of go through those phases and see how you could actually apply it. But yeah, it was very difficult in terms of fresh out of university and trying to be as clever as I could. But yeah, you can't always be like that and talk to people in the same way that you've learned, basically. So yeah, it's difficult.
Well, it's in effect, really. I mean, the dumbing down really is, I think, is totally acceptable if you can inspire someone to make that change. This is a bit like sort of the difference between watching telly and knowing how the telly works. You know, actually, sometimes, I suppose, if you can inspire somebody enough to actually take the action, then, you know, in one way, it doesn't really matter if you know, if what goes on behind the screen, you know what I mean, if you see the analogy. So
yeah, absolutely. It's just the different type of people that you got, and the system was a little bit flawed in terms of you ended up getting females with gestational diabetes that got flagged up, or you got kind of elderly ladies who are kind of 70 plus and they had a higher HbA1c, and it's kind of, that's natural, so they're not always going to be able to change their ways. So it's trying to find that demographic that actually needed that help and trying to apply it as well.
But yeah,
it's very difficult.
Yeah, and also one last word about that, I think, just trying to change diet with, you know, this for you know, for all of us, food is emotional. It's not just about the molecules, obviously. It's about how you share that. It's about the price of the food. It's so many other emotional aspects, isn't it, as well? Yeah. It's really, especially if you're sort of going to take food away from people, the food they like or the food that they get a kind of high from, and it makes their life quite pleasurable. It's really
and
difficult.
Most of the time it was alcohol, and that was the biggest thing that people were unwilling to take away.
Exactly.
And, imagine that. Those sort of things.
Totally. I had actually this guy who was when I was working in a real job, and he was the travel agent that we used in our office, and he basically just he would just eat what he wanted and just shoot up with the insulin. That was his approach to it.
Well, so it's kind it of worked like, for him.
It kind of worked for him.
Yeah, it's the reliance on medication is great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just like, anyway. So, yes, because I know I was at the beginning of my nutrition career then. I was really trying to inspire him, you know, to change and, you know, like maybe you could just balance the blood sugar. And it's like, no. It's much easier just to go out for a curry and take the shot. So anyway,
exactly. They're not going to change their lifestyles, a lot of them.
Well, today we're going to talk about magnesium. So why are we talking about magnesium particularly?
So we do have a slight agenda. So it is Viridian's ingredient of the year, but there's a good reason for that, just because of the amount of good that it does in the body. Yeah. And the link, well, we're seeing now that nationwide there's a kind of, it's a pandemic of, or kind of we're seeing deficiency across the board in terms of individuals. So it's around about 80% of individuals are being seen to have low magnesium status, and this is below that recommended daily amount. This isn't looking at that optimal status. So it's trying to understand that it plays such a huge role, and we understand so much about calcium, but magnesium seems to be one of those minerals that is passed by in a way in terms of our knowledge around it and what good it can do.
So do you regularly sort of highlight, you know, have you done this in the past where you highlighted a different nutrient and this year it's magnesium, or if you just sort of thought, right, well, this is, we're going to start with magnesium. What's the history of highlighting?
I think there's so much kind of misconceptions around magnesium, mm-hmm. especially the different forms that you have of magnesium, but it's also kind of the difference in terms of the dosages. But I think we just wanted to clear up what magnesium could do, where it can be used, and the kind of the ways you can deliver it into the body as well. So that's really what we wanted to do, and to just remind people that it is such an important nutrient that we can give to our bodies to increase so much kind of health benefits.
So have you or are you drawing the research about this deficiency from somewhere, or you know, how do we know it's a deficiency?
Yeah, so there's plenty of kind of research that's come out in terms of society-wide, where they take a small population of the group. So there's a recent one that just came out about the American ones in the NHANES study as well. So that was kind of across Americans, and that was showing around 60% kind of deficiency in magnesium. But in terms of the UK, there's a small subgroup of individuals that, well, not just a small subgroup, but this study was looking at a very small group of people to look at the kind of the national kind of levels of magnesium. So it was around about 5,000 individuals that they were kind of measuring, and that then looked at kind of, okay, so we're seeing around 80% of these people are deficient in magnesium. Now, understanding why is another thing, and we're seeing more people on medication. So around about 50 different types of medication can cause a deficiency. So we're seeing kind of issues in food production as well, in terms of having lower levels in our food generally. And we're also seeing that in terms of our ability to actually absorb it effectively. So the amount of people that have digestive disorders is again increasing the risk of malabsorption of magnesium and seeing lower levels as well.
So, I mean, obviously, I'm sort of asking you these questions off the top of my head. So, you know, I'm not expecting you to know some of these things, but
yes,
just because I'm curious. But so what are the common medications that mm-hmm. are a problem for magnesium, if you happen to know?
Yeah, so protein pump inhibitors, for instance. So a lot of people are on those again. So we're seeing a higher level of depletion of magnesium. So again, for any digestive medication, there's always going to be a link with that. Then we're also seeing in terms of a lot of blood pressure medications as well. And but even kind of antidepressive medications like citalopram, they're again, they're linking the kind of the increase in depletion of magnesium, whether it's kind of affecting the reabsorption of magnesium in the liver and the kidneys, or it's just kind of depleting it and kind of inhibiting our ability to actually break it down. So there's a lot of reasons and there's a lot of different medications. So there's around 50, but again, the kind of the main subgroups that I can link presentation to this that gives the kind of the exact ones. But again, you can go through that. There is a kind of such a large list.
Yeah, large, well, you mentioned 50. I think it's just interesting because actually I hadn't really considered that before. You know, obviously we know, you know, a little bit about the deficiency due to farming practices and soil mm-hmm. health and all of those things. That seems, you know, I thought that was maybe the main reason rather than medication. I was suddenly like, oh yeah, that's really interesting. It's just sort of like the first time I'd really considered
that. Yeah, and it's a kind of combination of everything. So because we're having a lower level of magnesium, we're then kind of causing an issue in terms of the medications on top of that. So the small amount that we're actually getting from the food system is actually then being depleted even more. But then kind of we know that there's so many other factors like your gender, genetic disorders, medical conditions, your age. So it's all kind of linked in. And again, as we age, we increase the medications as well. So it's just understanding that there's always going to be a link between all of them.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you've got magnesium deficiency sort of signs, because mm-hmm. you know, how do we, you know, I mean, obviously there's things like cramping, presumably.
Yeah, that's an obvious one.
Mm.
Then we've got kind of brain fog as well. That's often associated. And even high blood pressure, lower bone mineral density. I know it's harder to kind of measure some of those things. But again, it's thinking about the signs that you kind of linked. Again, we often think about fatigue and sometimes we often think about iron, but magnesium is another one of those. So when you think about its function for energy, we're seeing how it works on the ATP enzyme and how it can actually utilize that function through the mitochondria and kind of create that energy more effectively as well. So again, that's where we're seeing that link with the fatigue side of things, but even kind of increased levels of depression and anxiety. So if we think about our mental health, so there's been studies before that have shown the link between magnesium deficiency and the increase in mental health. So there's a receptor in the brain known as the N-methyl-D-aspartate receptor. So you probably have heard of it. It's the NMDA receptor. And basically that kind of controls the influx of your glutamate, your glycine, your calcium, magnesium. But if we've got low levels of magnesium and an increased level of calcium, for instance, it basically increases the excitability of that. So it increases the level of glutamate going through, which then causes that kind of overexcitable behavior sometimes, or links to increased levels of addiction. And then that can then cause that kind of overstimulation of the brain, causing anxiety, causing the depression side of things. So it's finding that balance between the minerals in our body that kind of compete against each other, and how we can actually regulate our receptors as well. So they're more immune symptoms of kind of magnesium deficiency again, and it's just seeing the link between it as well.
Yeah, so my biochemistry is a tiny bit rusty. So magnesium obviously is a key part. I mean, actually, interestingly, obviously vitamin D plays a key part in vitamin D, converting yes. vitamin D to the active form. Am mm-hmm. I not right?
Absolutely.
Now I'm just trying to think, what if we take, say, too much too much magnesium, what is it influencing?
Okay, so the biggest sign that you're taking too much magnesium is if you're suddenly getting watery stool. Yeah, yeah. Basically. So that's the easiest way. It's a great way of analyzing. Yeah,
is that a good indication, joking apart? You know, just like,
yes, generally. Yeah. So I would always kind of titrate your magnesium dosages. So if you take 300 milligrams to begin, well, you can start with 200 milligrams and then build up to 300. And then if you're still kind of comfortable, your stomach is fine, then that means that you're getting the right level of magnesium. If you suddenly increase that dose and you start to get that kind of irritability in the stomach, you start seeing kind of more watery stool, then that's an indication that you're taking too much magnesium. So the whole process of magnesium when it comes into the body is that it draws water in. So again, that increases the stomach volume and then pushes out. So for people with constipation, it can be great. So again, for I know it's often used for people with IBS like symptoms. So, and just to help kind of clear things through, but it's not something I would always recommend too much, because you still want to kind of utilize the magnesium and kind of make sure it's getting to where it needs to be. So this is when you look at the bioavailability of things. So sometimes more bioavailable doesn't necessarily mean better in terms of magnesium. So we're always like looking and searching for things that are in the blood straight away. But sometimes if you put too much or dump too much magnesium in one go, that can cause that quicker kind of gastrointestinal emptying. But again, you're looking at slower dosing of magnesium. So your oxides, your amino acid forms, they're slightly slower at being absorbed. And again, that can reduce that influence on the gut as well. So they can actually be directed more effectively around the body.
So what is the sort of forms that probably aren't helpful for that water, push through?
Yeah, so your citrates would probably be the one that you need to be most careful with. So you'd probably want to stick around the 300 milligrams of magnesium with that. So it's about 3.5 grams of teaspoon, basically gives you 375 milligrams of magnesium. So it's one of the lower ones, but although in terms of levels of magnesium, hence you don't want it in a capsule. And that's a thing, because you've often seen massive capsules or tablets with magnesium citrate in, and you don't really want to be taking kind of loads of those tablets. So powder form is the best way of getting it in. But again, it's the most bioavailable form, but also the one that could potentially cause that gastrointestinal uptake. So again, choosing the right magnesium can be very influential in terms of your gut and how it is delivered throughout the body.
So in one way, even with the other forms, are you still going to get some gastrointestinal issues if you take too much anyway?
Yes.
So what you're saying in one way is, look, you can't really, in effect, you get the signs that you're kind of overdoing it. So you don't need to, let's say, for example, what am I thinking of? Where you might, so let's say zinc, you know, you're suppressing copper. So obviously you don't want to take too much zinc, otherwise you suppress copper. But with magnesium, in a way, am I right in reading that, in effect, you can't, the sign would be there that you're taking too much. So therefore you can't really overdo it in one sense, because you get the sign. Am I reading that right?
That is correct, and it is a safe mineral because of that action that it does on the stomach in terms of the drawing the water in. So, but if you do that over time, then there's a potential interaction and depleting other minerals as well. So you do need to be careful, and I wouldn't ever suggest taking more. Yes, exactly. So it's a mineral at the end of the day. So there's fat soluble kind of ability with it, and that's where you need to be a little bit careful with it. But again, most of us are deficient, and what we're looking at in terms of research around magnesium is actually bringing the sufficiency up rather than actually going above and beyond to an optimal level. We're purely just looking at that sufficiency level or making sure we are hitting the recommended daily amount. So again, it's just knowing kind of how much is too much and how long it should be taken. But magnesium is one of those that I would use kind of long term, just for general function, for kind of your energy, for your brain health, for again skin health as well, but just for general immune function as well, for bone mineral density also. So there's so many areas that you can look at in terms of where magnesium does fall under.
So how long do you think, you know, so people are experiencing clinical symptoms of deficiency, how long does it take, in effect? So my biochemistry is very rusty, as you can tell. But I mean, so are you actually building up, in effect, a resource of magnesium that you can then draw on i.e. it's stored. I mean, presumably it's stored in things like bone and muscle, isn't it? And
so yeah, so this is a good point, to be fair. Like when you're looking at your absorption, so basically it's through the kidneys a lot of the time, so you get a reabsorption process through there, but you actually lose around 50-70% of magnesium of that you actually consume through just going to the toilet. That's kind of quite a large amount. So you need to constantly keep in that level up, because you're constantly putting it in and losing it. So you do have a really good store in the muscles, in the bones. So the bones and muscles are the major source. And what we actually do in terms of measuring for magnesium levels is we often test the blood, which is actually a very inefficient way of checking for magnesium deficiency, because you actually only represent about 1%. So this is where we need to look at kind of more ionic forms of measurements of magnesium, or kind of biopsies and looking at red blood cell count of magnesium as well. So these are all things. So measuring blood is a very inefficient way. But again, if we can maintain our muscles, maintain our kind of bone mineral density, we're constantly looking at that. So we know how bones work in terms of osteoblasts and osteoclasts. They're constantly building, breaking down, repairing. So we need to be constantly feeding that magnesium in, like calcium, but we need to just make sure that we are having that ratio. So we are sometimes skewed in terms of the level of calcium that we have, and we have higher levels of that, and then that can increase the risk of kind of, again, atherosclerosis and drawing calcium out of the bones because of deficiency, because we've got kind of low levels of magnesium causing excitability in the brain as well. So again, it's just trying to make sure that we're balancing off those ratios, and we're not depleting one or another mineral. So we don't want to get to the point of, oh right, magnesium is now we've got too much, basically. But in terms of how quickly it can work, it will work quite effectively. So there's been studies over 8 weeks specifically on kind of mental health and depression. So there was one that was actually combined with vitamin B6. So B6 has a synergistic property, which is why it's kind of often associated with magnesium and taking or reducing the level of anxiety. But the kind of 300 milligrams and 30 milligrams of B6, they've actually been shown to actually reduce the levels of depression and improve or quality of life as well in an 8-week trial. So it works quite quickly, and we've seen how quickly it can work on like sleep as well, so relaxing the blood. And so when we're seeing its process of how it actually improves our kind of sleep, anxiety, depression, and that side of things, it's through that oxygenation of our blood, improving the vasodilation, controlling that whole growth, which is why for tinnitus, for example, that's why there's that benefit, because it's improving that blood flow, it's relaxing the blood vessels, it's relaxing the muscles, and we're seeing a far superior level of blood flow throughout the body, which is kind of restless legs, for instance, cramps. This is all linked to that, because it's kind of increasing that blood flow, oxygenation throughout the body as well.
Yeah, because I mean, it's always like, I think I've mentioned this a couple of times, which is, you know, my tinnitus, which I had, you know, which was actually horrible. I mean, it was after flu. I literally got flu about eight, 9 years ago now. I can't remember, it's sort of ages and ages ago. And you know, you realize how actually really nasty flu is. I mean, it was really nasty. I was vitamin D deficient, you know, and I was like, as a nutritionist, you know, you sort of like got a good diet, you know, and you just sort of, in those days, I don't really supplement that much in one way, because I was just like, you know, even with key things like vitamin D, I was like, nah, I'll be fine. It'll be fine. And I actually wasn't fine. It was like the vitamin D. But then I pumped myself up with vitamin D, and I got a magnesium, in effect, it exposed this magnesium deficiency, and got the tinnitus. So everybody's heard this boring story before. But I do find it fascinating, because it was the magnesium that solved it, actually. Because, you know, then supplementing with magnesium, getting the vitamin D presumably more absorbable, but it was just like weird, because it's meant to be brain damage, isn't it? Actually, it's not hearing per se, it's the perception of the sound through the brain.
It's that restriction of the oxygen into the brain, and that's kind of what it's down to. And again, it creates that brain, the brain to just think about something else. But
it's interesting, because then actually you know, I had such severe lung problem, you know, literally I couldn't breathe. So maybe that was in effect why I wasn't getting any oxygen in effect through my lungs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all about me, you know, Phil. I like to talk about myself, you know.
But it's a good thing. You need to relate to stories. That's the main thing.
Oh, yeah. I was like, but so magnesium, very important. I've never really forgotten my gratitude to magnesium. Yes. From those days.
Well, when you think about the vitamin D side of things, that there's actually studies that have come out showing that you can increase your vitamin D levels from just taking magnesium alone without having to dose
exactly.
up on vitamin D.
Without pumping yourself up with the vitamin D. It's mm-hmm. about the getting it to be utilized. Absolutely.
Which is something that's been missed. Like we've talked so much about vitamin D over the last couple of years in terms of how important it is, but we're missing the link with so many other nutrients. Like it's not just one thing that's going to improve our health. It's a combination of everything.
So. Exactly. I mean, I call it the Holy Trinity, which is, you know, D3, K2 mm-hmm. and magnesium, you know, on the sort of stool of health. That's where it all sits. I mean, you know, arguably really important magnesium. But, you know, in a way, isn't it? Sorry about the police car or whatever it is. I live in a dangerous town, Chichester. They're all
You're well protected. That's yeah, the main exactly. thing.
No, I was going to say, what was I going to say before I got distracted by that? I was going to say, really, it's interesting, though, because although magnesium and I are very good friends, with everything else that sometimes one is taking, especially as a nutritional therapist, you know, we're great experimenters. We forget about magnesium. Is that what you find? You know, it's kind of like, because also it's like B vitamins, you know, like B vitamins. When you take a B vitamin, you almost instantly think, oh, I feel much. Yeah, this is working. Yeah. There are certain nutrients that you go, oh, my God, that really did it. You know, whereas magnesium is a slow and steady wins the race, isn't it?
Well, if you look at basic biochemistry, you see where magnesium plays a role. It's the same with B vitamins. So whenever you look at any sort of mineral, any sort of nutrient, if we are deficient in it, there's going to be some sort of issue in terms of our bodily reactions. So we have to just base it down on going to the biochemistry, understand how our body actually works, and realize that it plays such an influential role in every part of the body. And it's knowing how to deliver it in there. So again, it is one of those long-term things that we should always be applying, but it's understanding, again, those different forms that I was mentioning, how to actually deliver it. So the amino acid forms are slightly different.
I think what's interesting is, as you've implied, is that magnesium, because of its, you know, a bit like vitamin D, in effect, has got receptors in pretty much every cell in the body. Magnesium is involved in almost every function of the body. I mean, obviously, you've just mentioned, I think, the Krebs cycle and, you know, the mitochondria and all of that key stuff. But I mean, you know, everything in between. So, you know, would you say that, I'm just trying to rack my brains, would you say that there's another comparable mineral to magnesium that sort of gets the biggest bang for your buck? In terms of like it's going to be doing a lot of base stuff for you?
Yeah, so well, all the minerals play it, like understanding sodium in a better way. So that's one of the things that we seem to forget about sometimes, how influential that is to our body. We're all about producing sodium in our diet, but that's also so linked with the magnesium, with our potassium, with phosphorus. Like they're all across the board in terms of how we can actually regulate them. So it's something that there's always optimal levels, and we can't take too much. So we know sodium in terms of the sodium potassium pump and kind of that link between each other. So we're kind of deficient in the levels of potassium and far higher in the levels of sodium we consume again. So it's increasing cardiovascular risk factors. So in terms of blood pressure, so one of the easiest ways to offset that is to increase our potassium levels and kind of offset that ratio. But in terms of where magnesium falls into that as well, it can allow kind of or draw other nutrients into the cells as well. So they all work synergistically. So there's not one thing that we need to be kind of focusing on. It is all of them. But in terms of magnesium, that is the one that's been shown to be depleted the most in terms of our food system and those medications.
Right. So in effect, actually, that's interesting. So in effect, actually, all minerals are sometimes depleted less than others. And so why is it particularly magnesium is deficient, like in the food system.
Yeah, I think it's just the one that's most susceptible to being damaged or being kind of taken out. So to heat, for instance, to kind of processing, is the most, it's the one that's kind of generally kind of being kind of wasted when we kind of process certain things. So that's
yeah,
really.
And is that because, you know, when we were at school, I seem to remember that magnesium is very reactive, isn't it? I mean, it's a sort of, you know, it's just like one of those, is it one that you put something in it, it blows up? I can't remember. Anyway,
I can't really remember that one.
A little bit dodgy. But I mean, I do remember that it's very unstable, isn't it? So yes, presumably that must have an effect.
It's all part of the electrolyte transport chain and kind of the electron transport chain. So they do have electrical energy and they can produce that kind of ability in the body to enhance our kind of redox status throughout and carry certain nutrients. And so, yeah, there's always, they're very powerful nutrients. And we see how they basically shape our Earth. If we think about how powerful they actually are, you'll find them in all our rocks, all our kind of, sand and everything like that. So, yeah, it's huge when we think about where we see it and how much we need it in our bodies as well.
So, I mean, what is the sort of evidence behind this, you know, sort of magnesium in sort of helping with some clinical conditions? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so in terms of mental health, we've seen plenty of studies on that, but for the level that we're actually seeing in terms of, for a short period of time, actually increasing or reducing the symptoms associated with mental health conditions, but even in terms of quality of life conditions also. But then we're also seeing in terms of metabolic conditions. So there was this large study that was on over 1 million participants, basically, and it was looking at 40 prospective cohort studies. So massive kind of meta-analyses, and it was kind of showed that you actually reduce, well, for every 100 milligram of magnesium increase in the body, you actually reduce the level of risk. So in terms of diabetes, stroke, you're seeing in terms of heart failure as well. So it's massive when we think about that link in terms of the kind of magnesium and those metabolic health conditions. So metabolic health conditions are one of the biggest health risk in this country. So we're seeing people in terms of the issues in terms of the public health system, a lot of that is down to our metabolic inefficiency and our inability to actually utilize energy very well and start causing these cardiovascular risk factors, the diabetes, the obesity sort of thing. So yeah, that's where we start to see it in that. But even in terms of clinical practice, so magnesium has been used for kind of intravenously for kind of reducing the arrhythmias in kind of open heart surgery. So that's kind of often used for just in hospitalization cases and surgery. So what they did, there was a measurement between, they don't often do this very commonly. So measure oral versus intravenous, and oral was actually able to maintain our magnesium levels and reduce the kind of arrhythmia cases, so the issues with heart palpitation, for instance, or irregular heartbeat. So reduce the level of arrhythmias the same as the intravenous form as well, and kind of post-surgery. So that's showing you that it's been used for years in terms of reducing cardiovascular risk factors, but it's also kind of oral dosing is as effective as intravenous dosing as well, and it can be used in clinical practice. So we're trying to elevate how taking magnesium or oral magnesium can make such a difference in terms of the public health system, in terms of metabolic conditions, in terms of reducing the cardiovascular risk factors as well. So yeah, it's massive when we think about the research on it and how effective it truly is.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously you've worked within the NHS, so it's really about sort of getting public health systems to see the value of preventative medicine as opposed to treating, you know, conditions once they've got down the road, which obviously is much more difficult to reverse. Mm. So, you know, it seems like it's a bit of a no-brainer, doesn't it, to sort of use some of these things. I mean, in the old days as well, just using things like Epsom salts, you know, all of these kind of, you know, which were commonly used, weren't they, in the past? Yeah. Which has kind of fallen, well, it's come back a bit, hasn't it, now recently, but it's fallen out of fashion a bit.
Yeah, I think that's based on the research, because transepidermal kind of magnesium it's not great at actually increasing magnesium levels. Like you can go and have a bath and have kind of Epsom salts in it, and it doesn't increase your actual magnesium levels. It might touch the surface of the skin and kind of, but it's not going to get into the muscles. Oral dosing is clearly the winner when it comes to the way of delivering magnesium. But again, it's still nice to relax in a bath of magnesium salt. So again, if you enjoy that, I would stop doing it.
Yeah, well, I was tempting you at the beginning to talk a little bit about skin health, because that's sort of a new passion of mine. So presumably that, you know, putting magnesium on the skin or taking it internally is, I just think, trying to think of some mechanisms. Presumably, what are the benefits for skin particularly?
So whenever we're looking at skin, we're looking at reducing the inflammation. We're looking at reducing pigmentation. And it's all about that blood flow. So anything that's generally where we see magnesium in terms of the mechanisms involved in it. So if you can increase the kind of the blood flow up to the kind of upper layers of the skin, so into the epidermis, then we're going to see a far healthier way of kind of clearing out dead kind of skin cells. We're better kind of producing keratin layers as well. So we're seeing just that internal factor of magnesium just increasing that blood flow and that clearance of kind of waste buildup, basically. So that's really where we're seeing in terms of magnesium. But again, there's so many other nutrients that are beneficial, and kind of taking omega oils as well is brilliant for kind of maintaining that skin balance and kind of making sure that we're reducing the levels of free radicals and that kind of anti-inflammation side of things. So yeah, there's so many factors that you can do, but magnesium again is more around that blood flow.
Because I was talking about the I love, you know, just a bit off topic, but I love that the skin oil. Do you still do that? Skin repair oil. It's fabulous. Yes. Everybody should get some of that. Honestly, it's great. I just recommended it for somebody the other day with eczema. But it's great. You've done that for years and years and years, that product. And nice to see it hasn't slipped off. So it's popular. I mean, not surprising. I think it's great. It gets results and it's good. Not that, you know, I'm not doing an ad campaign for you, but really it is a fabulous product there. So so basically what forms do you particularly do? I mean, do you do a few or how does that work?
Yeah, so there's so many different forms out there. So you have kind of your citrate, which probably is your most common form, and that's you kind of want to take that in powder form. So that's a brilliant magnesium for increasing systematic levels of magnesium. So getting throughout the body and just kind of elevating just general magnesium stores. And then you've also got kind of the high potency forms as well, which you can take in a capsule, and that can again increase your systematic levels of magnesium. It's not really any direction in terms of where it's going or any specific condition. It's more about just maintaining that level. So it's probably more linked to energy and getting it into the muscles, because that is, and into the bone. So they are the major group. So again, we want to increase that and magnesium levels around those. But we've actually just brought out an organic form of magnesium as well, and that's derived from sea lettuce. So it's basically just kind of dried and then put into capsules, and it's a brilliant way of kind of getting natural forms of magnesium. I know everyone's looking for more natural ways of delivering magnesium into the body, but it is a more expensive form. But again, if you want an organic or natural form, we do have that option as well.
What's the sort of dose in that?
So that would be 150 milligrams per capsule. So it's still a good dose, but again, it's always going to be a price point on that one, just because of the organic status. But then there's lots of others. So another one is magnesium bisglycinate. So you can get this one in around 160 milligrams per capsule. But it's a brilliant kind of form of magnesium because it's bound to two kind of molecules of glycine. So glycine is, again, a brilliant amino acid. So it's abundant throughout the body, and it can help deliver magnesium into crossing the blood-brain barrier. It can help with relaxing the body. It's more directed like sleep and mood-related conditions.
Is it liver as well, says me?
So there's always going to be detoxification side of things, but it's more working on the brain and just delivering that glycine just because of the levels of, well, it's a, it can work as a neurotransmitter as well, but it can also help in terms of kind of controlling core body temperature as well. There's some research on glycine for that. So it's something I would always kind of link with kind of menopausal symptoms, so hot flushing, that side of things. So yeah, glycine is a brilliant amino acid for those side of things, especially for that kind of relaxing anxiety and kind of just improving our general feelings as well. But then you've also got magnesium taurate, which is another amino acid form. So it's generally more higher, or it's higher in taurine, which is again abundant throughout the body, mainly in muscles and or in our muscle cells, and then in our heart cells as well. But it can actually help deliver magnesium to these areas. So for cardiovascular effects, that's the form that I would use. But it can also help relax the body of that because of that kind of cardiovascular effect. It's again improving our blood vessel, improving our blood flow as well. So it helping to relax the body and calm the body down also. But yeah, there's so many different forms that you can take, but it's knowing that they all have a reason to be used. So again, depending on what you're looking for, there's something, always speak to or look at the research and see where they can be applied to.
So you have also a retail, don't you? So you obviously you love practitioners, obviously, mm-hmm. but you have a strong retail presence. I mean, does the general public get this nuance of these different magnesiums, or do you find one or the citrate form kind of sells better? I mean, what do you find?
So the one that sells the best is our magnesium citrate or high potency. They're basically the ones that are most obvious magnesium when you can combine them with other things. So this is why we push the education side of things. I'm often going out and doing talks and doing training to make sure people are aware of the differences and how they can use it as well. And kind of in the health food stores or health stores, they know a lot of this stuff, and it's just having that reminder of how it can be used and where we can put it into the body as well. So that this is the main things in terms of the questions we get asked, and it's a very big kind of talking point that we have. And I think this is why magnesium is the ingredient of the year for Viridian, because we are trying to push the knowledge around it and the misconceptions around that as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly, you know, it's one of those nutrients that we shouldn't ignore. I mean, obviously, yeah. I mean, is there any other nutrient? Because we talked a bit about vitamin D and its relationship with magnesium. Are there any other nutrients we should consider when thinking about magnesium? And we talked a bit about B6, didn't we? But
yeah,
what are there any others we should be aware of?
So I think mainly it would be kind of your calcium. So they're two minerals that are synergistic. So again, if we have too much of one, it will deplete the other. If we have too much of the other, it's having that careful relationship and that careful balance. So increasing our magnesium levels can reduce the level risk for atherosclerosis as well. So helping to draw the calcium out of the blood via the function around the vitamin D hormone as well. So it kind of works everywhere. So even when we're looking in terms of other B vitamins as well. So if we're seeing an enhanced level of the Krebs cycle, we're seeing where kind of magnesium then plays a role. But in terms of malic acid as well, malic acid is another nutrient that is kind of synergistic with magnesium, because it can actually help with breakdown of nutrients in the Krebs cycle. So we understand that kind of cycle. But again, looking at how magnesium can then kind of work with malic acid and improve the efficiency of our cells to create energy as well. So it's just working on that Krebs cycle, delivering it into the body as well. So you probably have heard of magnesium malate, which is again another form of magnesium that you can take, and it's brilliant for the muscles and brilliant for energy as well.
Yeah, I think some people take that for fibromyalgia, don't they? So for example, yes, so absolutely. That sort of spot pain, you know, that people have with that condition. Mm. Well, that is just such an interesting tour of magnesium. Is there anything I have neglected to ask you, Phil? Or is there anything else you just want to cover? Is there anything else you want to cover about magnesium?
So, I'll kind of summarize it really. It's one of those nutrients that we often kind of overlook in terms of its importance. we see how it can play a role in terms of brain health, in terms of our cell health, the mitochondria. We can see how it can improve our kind of activation of vitamin D. We can also see how it can help kind of the skin health, kind of our brain health, our kind of just general blood flow as well for the cardiovascular function. So there's not really an area that it doesn't fit into, and it's just finding delivery methods for it that are suitable for you and your clients, and just making sure that there is a kind of a use for it. And I think it's understanding the links between the deficiencies and kind of making sure that we aren't kind of overdosing as well. So having that kind of slight kind of control over it as well. But it is a very easy supplement to kind of take, and is also very good for kind of long-term use as well. So yeah, it's just understanding that whole kind of principle where we can utilize it in certain health conditions as well. And there's a plethora of research where we can see that it can make a difference in terms of these health conditions, specifically metabolic, which is very, again, close to my heart in terms of the work I've done with the NHS, and kind of finding out that the kind of the biggest public health risks are down to a lot of our own issues in terms of increasing the risk of metabolic health or metabolic health risk factors. So again, it's just looking at the bigger picture, how we can use it and how long we can take it for as well. So they're all the things that we need to consider and make sure that we are applying it in the right ways.
Well, that is great. Magnesium, everybody, is the mineral of the year. We heard it here first, at least with Viridian anyway. So how can people get in touch with you, Phil?
Yeah, so you can either visit our website at viridiannutrition.com, or you can email us at info@viridian-nutrition.com. My email is phil.b@viridian-nutrition.com. But again, it's use our technical helpline. We're out there to kind of 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, to always give out information on our products and kind of contraindications as well. So do use us as much as you can, because we are very keen to kind of push and educate as many people as possible. And if you want to kind of purchase our products, again, that's the best way, is through the natural dispensary. That's the kind of best way for you guys. So again, it's just using us and making sure you can understand how to use our products as well. That's the biggest thing.
Well, also, I was saying at the beginning of the interview, I think, that actually Viridian is really good value, I think. I mean, you know, I think it's good bang for the buck. And, you know, it's not, it's you know, it's quality and it's quite reasonable, you know. So I think, you know, that's always a concern with clients, that, you know, actually it just can really tot up, you know, with supplements, can't it? You know,
But I think you need to just understand what makes a good supplement, looking at the ingredients, understanding what you need and don't need. So when there's bulking agents, when's the anti-caking agents, when there's kind of magnesium stearate, and even like titanium dioxide has now been banned in Europe and people are still using it in their products. So it's just making people aware that, so in the UK, it's not banned, but in Europe it is. So,
really?
Yes.
So they're probably dumping all their crappy old titanium dioxide on the UK market.
So yeah, do look at the
not responsible people, obviously, but you know, I'm sure a lot of kind of the more dodgy end of the supplement market, you know, that is probably a case.
Yeah, but yeah, just know what you're buying.
Look at
the ingredients. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, that is a very interesting point, which I hadn't considered. Well, Phil, it's been real, as they say. It's been amazing. And we will have you back on really soon. Maybe, you see, just to satisfy my curiosity about skin health, we can look particularly at skin health, because you do have a... This is me getting round to that again. you know, because you've got some good other supplements that are skin, particularly skin supplements, haven't you? So
yeah, we've got a huge range.
Let's talk about that soon.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I'll look forward to it. Perfect. All right. Well, listen, for those of you who are listening at home, thank you very much. I'm Phil from Viridian. Thank you. And we'll have you back soon to talk about skin health. I'm not letting you off the hook. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Go well.